Well, the American Jazz Museum has a new director, and she'll just be moving a few blocks from her longtime digs at the Kansas City Public Library. After a nationwide search, the museum has tapped Shepto Kosatane Buckner for the new post. She spent 25 years at the library with a stint as one of the three deputy directors there. She'll be taking over an institution that has grown stale in the eyes of many Kansas Cityans, but with some new promise as the city gears up to build a new baseball complex nearby and pump as much as $18 million into the district. Shepto Kosatane Buckner joins me now, and congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
This is exciting.
It's very exciting.
Why did a deputy director at the Kansas City Public Library want to head the American Jazz Museum?
I think what is important is not is the experience of running a non-for-profit organization. I am very passionate about 18th and Vine. I actually lived in Parade Park in 1988 and that kind of thing, and just was able to visit 18th and Vine before even the renovation and that kind of thing. So I have a very warm affection for 18th and Vine and that kind of thing. I think it was a time for me to make a career move, and the opportunity to use my skill, my passion, and my strength to really enhance the Jazz Museum, but really the 18th and Vine district as a whole.
What is it about that district that drew you so and you regard so highly? What is it?
It's the cradle of African American history in Kansas City, and it's not just the African American history, but Kansas City history and national history. It's about jazz. It's about baseball. When you look at the geographical area within 18th and Vine, you have these wonderful institutions that are preserving and celebrating African American history, from the Jazz Museum, the Negro Baseball League, the Mutual Musician Foundation, Friends of Avenelli, the Black Archives, the Call, Lincoln Up the Hill. Think about that. Even Parade Park itself is very historical. So that, to me, I see as the hub of where African-American culture and history is being celebrated and preserved.
I just love that area. I'm always amazed that more people don't. It's just a wonderful, wonderful part of our town.
It is, and it's a wonderful asset for this city and the community as well.
You know, I assume you're a jazz fan.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And you first began listening when in your life?
I actually began listening in Kenya. I grew up in Kenya. Yeah. And as we talk about jazz is African orientation from Africa and that kind of thing. And so there are people like you, Makasela, who really played African jazz. Mm-hmm. So I started listening with that. But my husband was actually a DJ. And so I listened to a lot of jazz. We have a lot of music, and my father-in-law is also a lover of jazz. So I've been listening to jazz every day for a very long time.
You know, which jazz artists these days really light you up?
I think one of the best music that I've had lately is Bobby Watson, the Gates Barbecue Suite.
Yes, that's
wonderful. I think that is a wonderful piece.
You just played it last weekend, part of it anyway, at the gym.
I was for the Jay McShane celebration.
Yeah, it was just great. Yeah.
Beautiful. John Coltrane, Love Supreme, of course, is always popular with
classic
me.
Album.
Classic album. And Miles Davis, Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I love that kind of music.
Maybe the most famous jazz album of all time, Kind of Blue, right?
Yes.
The jazz scene in this town strikes me as almost always evolving. And I'm wondering, lately we're down a jazz club or two, but it occurs to me that the Blue Room is the one mainstay here that you know is going to be there, you know, year in and year out. How important is the Blue Room to the continuation of jazz in this town?
It is absolutely important, and it is very important for the continuation of jazz in this town. But also, the Blue Room is known nationally and has won several awards and is noted as one of the best jazz venue. And I think it is very critical. It's a major asset of the Jazz Museum. The other thing I would like to point out is when people talk about the museum, they think about the museum, but the museum is really the Blue Room, the collections, the exhibits. You have the jam, you know, you have the gift shop. You have so much amenities related to the museum.
Yeah.
But the Blue Room is very, very important, and it's doing a wonderful job. They have performance four nights a week. It's very happening and hopping at the Blue Room.
You know, you mentioned you grew up in Kenya, Shepto, and it's a very large family.
Yes.
Tell us about your family.
Wow. Grew up with eight brothers and two sisters. Eight brothers, yes.
How did you survive in a house with eight brothers?
That's why I'm a very strong woman today, and I can handle a lot of things.
I was going to say, there may be a correlation there,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. So I learned a lot from that. But eight brothers, very political family.
Very political family.
Very wealthy and very influential and that kind of thing. But very well known and very involved in Kenyan politics.
I was going to say, your father was very politically influential and was a power in his time.
Yes.
A political power. Tell me about that.
He was. Actually, one of the things that I like to say is that I grew up just with people in my house nonstop because they were always coming in to seek either my father's advice or his endorsement. And I do not remember anybody within the county winning a seat without my father's endorsement. He was that powerful. And it was great to watch. And I learned a lot from him.
Was he a good guy?
He was an excellent guy.
And he was about what? What did he want to see happen in the area around where you lived, course of time?
I think one of the most important things for my dad was education. Neither my mom or dad actually went to school. They did not speak English.
Right.
But really what was very, very important is education for their children, and especially the girls. I think what was unique about my father during his time as an African man, that empowerment for women was very critical. And that's why my education to him was even more critical than my brother's education.
I read a story about you and your mother, who apparently at one point sided with one candidate for a major office, and your father was siding with somebody else. And at the time, that was regarded as a little bit unusual for a woman not to sort of walk in lockstep with her husband. How did that play out?
I look at her as my hero. She really did an incredible job of standing up to my father and the other men who were trying to sway their influence. And it really taught me how to believe in what I'm doing, but also not to be afraid to take risks. And when you're passionate about something, you really have to follow that passion. And by the way, my mother's candidate won.
Is that right?
Yes.
How does your father take the news that his wife was going to back somebody else?
He was not very happy. I think we had a lot of men come to the house to ask my father to consult with my mother so that my mother can talk to the women and support the candidate that the men were supporting, but that did not go very well. She was a very strong woman, and she stood by, I believe, and it was great. But, you know, the candidate that won ended up to being the best candidate anyway.
Oh, looking back on it now,
yes.
You're pretty well convinced of that, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. Are your parents still around?
No, my dad passed away in 1998, and I lost my mother about 6 months ago.
How often do you get back to Kenya?
I try and get back every 2 years. If there is something major, like a wedding or some family major event, I'll try and get back. But I am a mother of two beautiful girls, a 17-year-old and a 10-year-old. So traveling to Kenya often is not very flexible as much.
Well, you grew up on a ranch in Kenya, a large ranch. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
It was a large-scale farm.
What kind of farm?
Large-scale. So we grew a lot of wheat, corn, mm-hmm. Raised dairy cattle and beef cattle.
So your dad was a farmer?
My dad was a farmer and also owned a lot of businesses within the community and that kind of thing. The farm is still there. My younger brother, he's now living at the farm and taking care of the farm and that kind of thing. But it still exists today, and that's still our family home when we go back to Kenya.
Describe it to us. I mean, is it flat and fairly arid? I don't. What's it look like?
Well, I come from the Rift Valley, and so part of it is they are part of hills and valleys and that kind of thing. It's not as flat as Kansas, but it's really beautiful. That we are right on the equator, and so the temperature in Kenya is very moderate. The highest that it will get as hot as maybe 80 degrees, maybe 78 degrees, and as cold as 50 degrees. Just beautiful weather throughout the year.
Well, okay, dumb question. I thought the equator meant it was going to be really hot.
No, it's not very hot. Now, some of the coastal parts of Kenya or the northern part of Kenya mm-hmm. is hot, but it's really very temperature.
You know, I also read that you once said that growing up in a family with a very politically influential father meant that you knew you couldn't get into trouble.
Yes. You had to be here because everybody knew who Akositan was. So I had to make sure that I was always doing the right thing.
You know, one of your brothers also was married to the daughter of one of Kenya's presidents. Another one works for the chief of staff of the country's current vice president. Is that still the case?
Yes, my brother is passed away now, the one that was married to the president's daughter. But my current brother, yes, is an aide to the vice president of Kenya.
So the political influence continues to this day.
It continues to this day.
So were strings being pulled to help you get the position at the American Jazz Museum from Kenya?
No, I don't think so. I went through a very aggressive, competitive process. The board of the Jazz Museum did a beautiful job. And they also, you know, what I think what was very good about the interview process was that they really included the community in the search process. So the decision for picking this position was very inclusive. It was board members and community members actually making the decision. I think that is very, very important to make sure that the community is engaged in the selection of the leader of the Jazz Museum.
Shepto Kosotani Buckner is my guest. She's the new executive director of the American Jazz Museum in the 18th and Vine District. If you want to join our conversation this morning, 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You came to this country in 1983 for college, and I'm wondering why you wound up at Central Missouri State University, which is now known as the University of Central Missouri. What got you out here in the heartland?
My two brothers were already here, and so when I finished high school in Kenya and was ready to extend my studies, I really wanted to go to Texas A&M because I was interested in technology, and my dad basically said that CMSU was good enough for my brothers, and he was paying for it, so that's where I was going. And so I came here because I had there were people already here that I knew. And if you look at a number of international students, I think, in colleges, you'll find that a lot of students come from the same village or the same town or the same city because it's word of mouth. And if you're going to a foreign country, you really want to go where you might be able to find friends and people you know.
I was going to say, I bet he felt good that you had two brothers here to look after you a little bit, too.
Yes, I did.
You were just one of two women in the information technology program at Central Missouri State. What drew you to that?
I knew that was even before the internet, right? But I knew technology was going to be a very major factor moving on in the world. And I was really, I love math, okay? I mean, I'm one of those people that really love math and that kind of thing. And I saw the IT environment as a way that I can utilize those skills. And I love the programming and the coding and those kind of analytical piece of work and stuff like that. So that's what drew me. But I also knew that I could see the future in terms of what technology was going to do and what it was going to change.
You know, one of your big responsibilities at the library involved technology. You said once that the digital divide is the civil rights issue of the 21st century. Meaning what?
Meaning that connectivity is critical to everything we do. You cannot apply for a job. I mean, 80% of the businesses require you to have an online job application. You look at health, the Affordable Care Act came out all digital and that kind of thing. And so the civil rights issue is that just for basic needs, you need technology. And so connectivity for everybody is important for them to just be able to live their day-to-day life, including getting health care.
You know, you had your challenges at the library, and you're going to have them at the museum, too. And I'm wondering, maybe the million-dollar question here is, how do you make a museum that many regard as a little long in the tooth fresh again and exciting again for the people of Kansas City and for everybody else, too?
First of all, I would like to say there is a lot going on at the museum right now. And I think one of the things that we've got to do right away is begin to promote and make the community aware of the wonderful, good things that are going on right now. But in addition to that, we could really, we have a lot of opportunities with the Jazz Museum. We have, for example, partnership with the National Endowment for the Arts to connect with the Jazz Masters when they do that, partnering with the Lincoln Center, partnering with the performing community that is galleries in Kansas City, looking at temporary exhibits, fresh exhibits that are changeable more often and that kind of thing. Our changing gallery is doing a fabulous job. We have the Hale Woodruff exhibit right now in companion with Nelson, something like that, continuing that. We are hoping to have an exhibit in March of 50 ceramic women, the only exhibit that of women who are doing ceramic that will be opening in March. So there's a lot of wonderful things going on, but there's also a lot of opportunities that we could do. Partnership is going to be important. Collaborations with the whole entire district is going to be important. I see an opportunity of us actually putting out there a community, a district calendar of activities going on so that people know what's going on there. Joint programming between us. I'll give you an example. Arvin Ailey produced a lot of his pieces that had jazz musician Jay McShane and Charlie Parker. Well, the Friends of Arvin Ailey is up the street, the Jazz Museum, and then the Black Archives has the only collection of personal papers of Arvin Ailey. We could get together and do joint programming in a major way. I think individual programs within the institutions does not scale. Yeah. We've got to find a way to scale it so that we are really delivering the best programming, entertainment, access to research within the 18th and Vine District. And I think we need to look at each other as holistic as opposed to siloed institutions and really...
I was going
to
say, you do get a sense that not everyone's in sync down there. The Mutual Musicians Foundation sort of off on its own, and you sort of wonder why there's not more togetherness there.
Oh, and I think they have great leadership in the district, and I think we have good I have good relationship with them right now. We hope to continue that moving forward in making it really successful.
You know, a lot of people in Kansas City, just being blunt, a lot of folks, you know, aren't comfortable coming down to 18th and Vine after dark. They're scared. They think crime's going to occur. I've never had an issue with it, and don't know anyone really who has. But I'm wondering, how do you overcome that? How do you get folks to come down and enjoy an evening and not be worried?
I think you let people educate people about what's going on there, and if you, I mean, and promote what we are doing, engage the community. What is going on? I think the perception is something that we're going to need to work hard on. If you look at the statistics in terms of crimes in that area, it's very low. So it's a perception issue. And so one of the things is really begin to educate. There's more crime actually, you know, in other areas and not necessarily on 18th and Vine and that kind of thing. So we need to promote ourselves and let people know that it's a safe, safe place. I feel very safe over there.
Do you need more ongoing financial support from the city?
Yes, we do. And we need financial support from the city. I think the new infusion from the city for the $18 million into 18 and Vine is really, really needed at this particular time.
Talking about the baseball complex that's going in and a whole series of other renovations and innovations
and
going
innovation,
on down there.
That kind of thing. I think it's very important. I mean, I think support from the city is important, but not just the city, the community. I think the we want support from the philanthropic community. We would love to see more engagement from the civic community. I mean, the Jazz Museum and the 18th and Vine is a major asset for this city. And so I would love to see more engagement from the civic community and really have a stake at 18th and Vine in making it successful. I don't think it's one individual. I don't think it's just the leadership within the district. I think it's all of us in terms of really having a stake in that area to make it successful.
The other thing you hear is the lack of restaurants down in the district. Again, you're with the Jazz Museum, but how big of a concern is that?
That is a concern, but I think there are ways that we can, in the meantime, until there are final plans on doing some kind of fine dining in the district, there are ways that we can actually maybe help with that, which is providing people with opportunities. I mean, providing people with list of restaurants that are close to the district. So, and providing them packages for performance. If you're coming to the district, maybe having some partnership with, you know, Extra Virgin and saying, hey, can you provide 10% discount for those people attending at activities at 18th and Vine, but providing them other alternatives for dining that are not available at the Vine.
You know, there is this proposal at City Hall to spend several million bucks more to refurbish the district, as we're talking about here. The museum is penciled in for $1.3 million. What would that money be used for?
Updates of the exhibit and also an upgrade of the amphitheater, the J. McShane Amphitheater.
Do you need new exhibits there?
We need to update the exhibits. The exhibits are about 18 years old now since the Jazz Museum opened. We need update. Those exhibits were open before technology was possible. So I think a number of infusion of technology, interactive exhibits, and that kind of thing is going to be very, very important moving forward. And I think we need to begin thinking about what does a 21st century museum looks like, and how we can take advantage of that to really engage the younger people within the museum and the district.
What I'm hearing from you is there's all kinds of potential here.
Lots of potential and lots of opportunities. And we want the community to be with us, to collaborate with us, and to help us. We do realize that there have been some challenges, but we cannot run away because there are challenges. We are here to fix those challenges so that we can preserve this asset. And it's a pride of Kansas City, and so we cannot not support it.
You know, once upon a time, a mayor in this town, his name was Emmanuel Cleaver, had his eye on Charlie Parker's saxophone. He went out and bought it, and it's become sort of a centerpiece exhibit at the Jazz Museum. Do you have your eyes on anything out there that's sort of floating in the jazz stratosphere that you'd like to bring back to Kansas City?
I think that the piece that I would really love to, I mean, it would be great if this happened, is the Ed Dwight is a sculpturist, and he's done a lot of sculptures of jazz musicians. I think that would be great to have his collection in the Jazz Museum
as a
permanent collection.
Where are they housed now?
He has them at his studio right now, but there's actually
here in town.
It's not in town. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think he originally came from Kansas City, Kansas.
Yeah.
There is a piece of his at the Jazz Museum right now.
You're talking about like the Field of Dreams at the baseball, Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, bringing that over to the
having,
Jazz Museum.
Having the same kind of sculptures for the different jazz musicians.
Well, Shepto Kosatani Buckner, congratulations. Good luck with your work at the American Jazz Museum. It's a pleasure to have you here. We'll be rooting for you, okay?
Thank you, Steve.
You bet.